Welcome to What CEOs Talk About. Do you wonder what CEOs talk about behind closed doors? How they bring their vision to reality? How do they overcome and succeed through adversity? We share that and so much more with each episode. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hello, everybody. My name is Martin Hunter. I am the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we translate vision into frontline strategy. Today on the show, Chris, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Fabulous. Chris, have you ever been in a position where you know somebody or you have sold the company?
Yes, you know anybody? I haven't.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
In their experience, yours or theirs, was it a good experience or was it a bad experience?
So in my personal experience, it was actually quite a good experience. It worked out well.
Good. And what was good about it? What made it? So if you think of process-wise, what made you think that it was a good exit? What'd you do well?
Sure. Well, I think there's a few things that come to mind. So one is the buyer was strategic. So it was a good fit. It wasn't just basically trying to buy a revenue stream. It was a buyer that understood the industry, that valued what our company had to offer and acknowledged that, I think, going into it. So that was part of it. Another part that made it good was that it was the right price. And of course, you know, what business sells for the wrong price, but it was a bit of an overtime discussion. Initially, we were not aligned on price. Talked about what it would take to get alignment on price in terms of growing the company, grew the company for the next year and got there on price, which was good. I think the third thing that comes to mind is it was a pretty smooth diligence process, pretty quick. The buyer was backed by a private equity company. There wasn't cold feet around it. On our side, we were really well organized as far as our information, documentation. There was still, you know, I'm not sure any diligence process goes, you know, totally smoothly, but all things considered, they were well organized. We were well organized. We were both on the same track as far as what we wanted to see. And that went through quite well. And then the last thing I think that I felt went fairly smoothly was the actual integration. So the integration of our company into the acquiring company. The acquiring company had gone through a few acquisitions before, had a good understanding of what makes for a good acquisition and integration. And of course, some bumps. You're always going to have that, but nothing that would make me look back and think, oh, there was a major ball that was dropped. Generally speaking, came through the other side feeling, yeah, that was a well-run acquisition.
And did you have a third party do the integration?
No, it was between the two parties. There were third parties involved, of course, lawyers and accountants and all the rest of it, but no third party involved as far as the actual integration.
So for the listeners, Chris mentioned a couple of things. They had a conversation prior to about a year, you said, something like that.
That's right. Yeah, a year, 18 months.
Yeah, 18 months, right? And so Chris was asked, I said, hey, listen, you're very appealing. Your organization is good, but it's missing a few ingredients for us to be able to meet your price. So what Chris did is he grew the organization to meet that target, right? And so the second component that you said was really you were very clean in regards to documentation and process. You weren't chaotic. And then the last one was an integration, was having a good integration. And that led to if you listened to Chris, when I first asked the question, there was no debate. He said, I had a good experience because he had all those things. So at Urgio, our sponsor, is really about that, is you're looking for an exit. You're looking to scale. You don't necessarily have the capacity or the capability. You don't know how. You feel that you're stagnant or you're not just there yet. You can reach out to Urgio and they'll help you really get those three things. One, grow your business, scale your business appropriately. I'm assuming, Chris, that it wasn't just about sales, but it was also selling to the same profitability as well. So it's not just going crazy and sell. It was like, hey, let's sell diligently and make sure that we scale the business to be able to hit those targets. Number two is if you don't have a clean house, if you're not transparent and you're chaotic, there is no way that you can get the price that you're looking for. There's no way in hell. No way in hell. And the third one is really being aligned on that singularity or purpose with that strategic buyer. So Chris, congratulations. And if anybody out there is listening and you need help in any of those three areas, that's what Urgeo does. So urgeo.com, and they'll really help you scale your business, get the targets that you want, and really be that operator of choice for you guys to get to the next level. So thank you, Urgeo, for sponsoring this episode. Okay, enough with the message. Chris, what is the title of the show?
So the title of this show is Helping CEOs Live Their Ideal Lives.
Da, 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 da. There should be like drum sets or something going on. I was just on LinkedIn this morning and this guy came up with his book. I think I can't remember. He's like, growing my business while still trying to keep sane. It's just the message is, I like where the message is going of late, where I think people past COVID are realizing the importance of balance and sustainability and prosperity. That's what we talked about. So Chris, thank you. Can you tell us, give us your full name? Where do you currently work? What do you do? And then for the benefit of the listener and the people who are watching, give us a little bit of backstory. Where does Chris come from? Where does he do? Where did he grow up? So that they know the personality that he is speaking.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my name is Chris McPhee. I'm in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. And I help people get more of what they want from their business. I do that by helping them implement a complete and proven system using simple, practical tools to help them achieve three things we call vision, traction, and healthy. The vision part is around helping align the leadership team around the vision of the company, where it's going, how mm-hmm. it's going to get there. Traction is from the standpoint of instilling accountability and discipline in the leadership team, so they'll achieve that vision, gain that traction. And then finally, healthy is about building a healthy, cohesive, and functional leadership team, because unfortunately, a lot of time leaders might be good individually, but not maybe great in a team setting. And then from there, we get to the company, the place where the whole, as leadership team goes, so goes the rest of the company, get to the point where the whole company is really aligned on the vision. They all know where it's going. They all know how it's going to get there. And importantly, they're all working with accountability and discipline to achieve that vision. And then finally, they're working with people that they like and get along with. And so what I do is I do that on behalf of a company called EOS Worldwide, Entrepreneurial Operating System. Made famous by the author Gino Wickman, and the book is called mm-hmm. Traction. And I guess my background with that, I'll actually go back further than when I was introduced to it. So I grew up in an mm-hmm. entrepreneurial family. We owned the local newspaper and later on a furniture store. So I grew up both of those businesses, stuffing flyers in a newspaper, hauling furniture on the weekend. You know, learn the value of hard work, but also how important entrepreneurs are to a community. So I always had mm-hmm. that entrepreneurial itch that I wanted to scratch over time. First couple of jobs were good. I enjoyed the work, but it was never really felt that I had the personal impact that an entrepreneur mm-hmm. does. And so I left, started a consulting company. Shortly after that, met a visionary entrepreneur who had a new software product that I really resonated with. And that was actually the business that ultimately got acquired. So when I talked about that earlier in the episode, grew that business along with the visionary entrepreneur and had some great growth, but some really big growing pains as well. Some pretty classic growing pains, like, you know, a revolving door of talent, tough to find and keep the right people. Mm-hmm. As we scaled, quality of our delivery service was challenged, so needed to get a handle on that. But probably most importantly, the leadership team, it was felt like we were butting heads. We had trouble keeping on the same page as far as how we wanted to grow the company and move it forward. So that was when I stumbled across the book Traction and implemented mm-hmm. that system. And that was what gave us that confidence when the strategic buyer came knocking to say, you know, here's what we want to get to. We'd had a good track record. We knew what we were doing and had that confidence to make it happen. And I attribute that partly to the entrepreneurial operating system and that book mm-hmm. Traction. So got the company to that level where it was an attractive acquisition candidate, went through the diligence, moved across to the acquiring company, spent the next year and a half to 2 years finalizing the integration activities, and then exited. And when I looked at what I wanted to do next, I was really taken with, I guess, how entrepreneurs and CEOs are really affected by their business, right? It really is a part mm-hmm. of who they are. And if it's going well, they're doing well. If it's going poorly, they're doing poorly often. And then even if it's going well, sometimes they're doing poorly because of the challenges that work-life balance. And so what really resonated with me was was helping entrepreneurs and CEOs, you know, live their ideal life. And the way that that describe that is really a few different things, like doing what you love with people that you love, mm-hmm. making a difference, however you define that, being compensated appropriately, and having time for other passions. And just to close off on my story and how that all worked, it was just a case of knowing that business is important. CEOs are really you know, connected to their work. Entrepreneurs are connected to their work. But if that then means that the rest of their life falls into shambles, then who really wins out of that? And mm-hmm. And the idea is to, you know, basically help achieve all those business objectives, those aligning the company vision, or, you know, gaining that traction towards it, having a healthy leadership team, but to what end? And that end is to ultimately help that leadership team, the CEO, those entrepreneurs live their ideal life.
We use EOS. I mean, at different stages of business within our business, we use EOS. We fine tune it. We use other methodologies as well. What was the key thing when we talk about living your lifestyle, because you made a big change, right? Because my buddy Caesar in Florida did the exact same thing as you did. He implemented EOS and he says, I love it so much. Now he's working in Latin countries, only in Spanish, to help them kind of do what you do. What was the critical moment? What's the key ingredient? What's the thing from EOS that you went, damn, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life? Because, I mean, if you want to live the life that you want to live, there's always like a trigger event that kind of pushed you over. What was that?
Yeah, you know, I think the first trigger, and it wasn't EOS specific, but it was way back when I had my first real managerial job. So I was really overseeing a number of people. Before then, I'd had more of a technical career, so working with mm-hmm. software, computers, that type of thing. And I came to the realization, probably later than I should have, that challenges with people are never solved like technical issues are solved. You can solve a bug, you yes. can fix a piece of hardware, and it's fixed, at least till it breaks again. But dealing with people is just so complex and messy and beautiful. Right. And you can coach and encourage, and sometimes it has great impact, and sometimes it doesn't work. And it was fascinating to me about how, you know, we live in this world of technology and infrastructure and cars and trains and everything else, and yet it's really people that really make that impact, the people and the businesses, the people that are running those. And so so that was way back when. Didn't really think about that a whole lot until you know, started implementing EOS, and the aha moment there was when we started looking at people and the cultural fit. And I fully admit that I'm a latecomer to core values, cultural fit. For me, mm-hmm. that was always sort of a fuzzy HR mm-hmm. thing that never really meant anything. And I was honestly a bit cynical around it, but I'm a full convert, and I will fully acknowledge
I was going to say, man, from a tech guy to a complete EOS implementer, yeah. where you actually work through people. Congratulations. What a journey. What an awakening.
It was an awakening. I think that's exactly it. And it was a slow awakening. I don't know that there was any, you know, one moment that I had. But what was fascinating in the company where I was the president was we started opening staff meetings with reviewing our core values, and always brought up an example mm-hmm. of where an employee had had exhibited that core value. Mm-hmm. And what really made me a convert was when I was in a meeting and it wasn't me who brought it up, but one of the other employees was saying, well, no, we should do this because this is in alignment with our core value. And it actually was not great for the company's revenue or business yeah. from that side of things. It maybe meant losing a customer, but that was fairly clear in that employee's mind. This is the direction we should take because this is what we had been exhibiting. Fast forward to post close, and I was going out with a lot of the account managers from the acquiring company. We were talking to mm-hmm. all of our customers, explaining what had happened. Mm-hmm. Went to the fourth or fifth one, came out of it, and the account manager said, "Your customers love you. Like I need some of that. I don't know how that happened." And I said, No, it wasn't by accident. One of our core values is customer service, and here's how we live it out. And it may be at times it means we don't have all the customers that we want, but the ones we've got are the right ones for us, and they're profitable and reliable and all that good stuff that you like, which is why you acquired us.
That's why you like
them. That's why you liked us, right? Exactly. And so all those things put together, then, you know, post-integration, thinking about next step, then my first thought was, well, of course, I'd go back to another company and do what I was doing before. And then thinking, well, I've got a good opportunity with what I've learned to really positively impact that company. But if I work with EOS and help other companies implement it, I've got a good opportunity to positively impact a lot of companies. And so that was really, I think, where that shift came is thinking, you know, I can do really well for one company, or I can hopefully do well for a number of companies and help them along their way. And the same time, and also starting to, although it's not part of my EOS journey, is also to help coach and mentor young entrepreneurs, maybe not young in age, but, you know, new to entrepreneur. And just, you know, you see some of that blossom. I made pretty much every mistake in the book, either personally or as part of a company. And I can't tell them what to do, but I can often, you know, share stories that resonate, you know, with them and what they're going through. So, yeah, it's been a fairly major shift. There's been a few aha moments over time, but I think it probably goes way back to the first aha around, you know, it's people really that matter in whatever business you're dealing with.
So I did not come from a entrepreneurial background. I only discovered my entrepreneurial spirit, if you want to call it that, when about, what was it, 2017, I think it was. Before then, I was hardworking, you know, come from the East Coast, went through the military, went through the ranks, worked for mining, Valley, oil and gas, you know, transportation, large corporations. And it's only when I started really diving into behavioral-based leadership. So my leadership has always been strong. I've always been good at, you know, analyzing the behaviors of human beings, think, feel, do, the processing around that. And for me, when I started my entrepreneurial journey with all these systems we had, what we had scaling up, there's EOS, I went to Kaizen, but, you know, on the entrepreneurial side of growing a business, what stuck with me most out of EOS is really traction before vision. So as much as we love everything, what is really behavioral based, and I'm connecting dots here, is that a behavior is something you can take a picture of. When I give, you know, lectures or when I'm speaking, I always give the example of a zebra and a lion. If a lion kills a zebra and eats the zebra, is it a good or a bad behavior? Well, it's good for the lion, kind of shitty for the zebra. Right? Lion misses the zebra, good for the zebra, but shitty for the lioness and her cubs, right? So there's no good or bad. It's just enabling or creating risk. And I think that in the think, feel, do, right, you think you got your cognitives and all of your impressions, the feelings that are attached to what you're seeing, the sensory receptions that you've got, the chemicals kick in, and therefore you act upon it. Acting is the key critical component of any being, and a company is a being. Like you said, it is human beings until we have fully automated and robotic. There are people who are acting against a feeling that was dictated by a thought process that they had that brings a whole bunch of history. So to the point that I'm saying is that traction is key. That's what EOS really got me is, hey, traction before vision. Vision is great, but if it can't stick to the ground, which a lot of, I'll call EOS, kind not EOS, but other operating systems had that were too big. They're just too flaky, too up there. EOS is very tangible. That's what I like about EOS. Very, very strong.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. So my history prior to joining the software company had been primarily with large enterprise organizations and done a lot of, you know, offsite vision. And it's a lot of fun. It's very, you know, engaging. But the challenge is, of course, then you come back a year later and said, does anybody remember where our vision, our strategy plan was? Did anybody do anything with that? And And that was what I really loved about EOS is for that, you know, entrepreneurial size company, typically 10 to 250 employees, but mm-hmm. can be smaller or bigger than that as well. It just has that right size to make sure that you're teaching the fundamentals. So I like to talk mm-hmm. about it in, you know, football terms, you're blocking and tackling, right? You want to make sure mm-hmm. you're really good at that execution part. So that you can achieve the vision. We like to say vision without execution is hallucination. So mm-hmm. that's the idea of how to get there. And just a little story that I like to tell because it's personally relevant. I played football in high school and we had not a bad team, but we were playing this other team that should all rights. We should have crushed them. They were a small mm-hmm. town, you know, athletics probably about the same. We had a pro football player, expert football player is our coach. We had a, you know, huge playbook and all these sophisticated moves. The other team had six plays. That was it. They knew six plays. And there was this one time they were beating us handily. They were down to their 20-yard line. They played this draw play, scored a touchdown all the way back. There wasn't enough time to call another play because it was called back on penalties. So they reset up again. We knew exactly what they were going to do. We knew exactly the play they were going to make. And they scored another touchdown. And that's, to me, that's the traction part of it, right? It's yeah. that, you know, you are really, really good at executing a few things. So you've got that focus. And then you have that vision that comes, you know, has to be there so that you know where you're going, obviously.
Of course.
But that's, to me, I think, you know, I fully agree with you, that traction before vision. So you can really harness that energy, get it going the right way. And, you can achieve whatever you want. Like to say, you know, what do you want out of your business? Because you'll get it. Just make sure you know what know what you're getting into. Because if that's what you want, that's what you'll get.
The Japanese have a saying similar to that: is that vision without action is a dream, and action without vision is a nightmare. So let's talk to the listeners here. When we say traction means that you don't have to have a three-year plan. Well, it's important to know a three-year plan, but the three-year plan is not as critical as your one-week plan. Because I think one critical component that Gino has done really, really well is the L10, the level 10 meeting. Put that together. You don't have to be an EOS specialist to understand the concept of big to little. Here's the big things that we need to achieve, and what are the little things that need to break down to a binary decision? Is it done? Is it not done? I think that EOS has done really, really well with the L10.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, there, if you talk to companies running EOS and they're focused on the traction part, they'll typically say there's two things that fundamentally have changed the way they do business. It's the level 10 meeting, and it's their rocks. And I think because mm-hmm. we're not often used to being held so accountable in business. You don't get something done. Okay, it didn't get done this week. And so mm-hmm. often meetings generally feel like a waste of time because there's a few people that talk a lot and everybody else mm-hmm. listens till the meeting ends and you leave. And that level 10 meeting just really is that focus, trying to flip it on its head and saying, this is the most important 90 minutes that we'll spend together as a leadership team. And then we'll be on our own. We'll be doing other things. But in this time, we want to pull ourselves out of the business. We want to identify the most important priorities in the business. And we want to hold each other else accountable. And you know, there's no way out of it. So you, at the end of the meeting, you conclude by recapping your to-dos. And so the next week you get there and 9 out of 10 of them have to be done, or you've got an accountability issue. And it's, we like to say, it's a muscle that needs to be built. People aren't used to being held accountable, especially in those leadership teams. They're used to playing politics and blaming other people if things didn't get done. But there's no room for that in an entrepreneurial kind of company.
I agree. So if you know EOS, then you'll hear what you'll know exactly. So my integrator is Kevin. So I, being a solopreneur for so many years and really growing the business to where I'm at, I really had to embrace my title of visionary, which was very difficult. A lot of people say, oh, you're visionary, you'll see, you'll, but letting go of the day-to-day that I was, you know, an operator known for as the operator was one of the key things. And him and I always, he loves EOS. I'm more of a Kaizen guy. I lived my years in Japan and gone through mining and oil and gas and where Kaizen has always built there for me. The one thing that we argue always about. I'm a process accountability. He's a functional accountability kind of guy. So so he's like, who's accountable for that? For the process? He's like, no, who's functionally accountable? Well, I say, well, look, the process spans three functions. You can't have one. So I'd rather have somebody own the process than own the function. So we go at it. But I love him to bits. We are truly good friends. That's the thing. I'm process accountability. He's focused on functional accountability. That's the big thing. What is the biggest thing when you start implementing EOS? What's the first? They've given it a go for a little bit, and they go, I like this, but I really, really don't like this. What's the common kind of initial I don't like?
Yeah, you know, I have to back up even a little bit more because you mentioned the visionary integrator relationship. And I like to look at that right away because that was my experience. I was very much the integrator mindset, the visionary mindset. We could definitely, you know, go together far when we acknowledged and complimented one another, but there's also it's like fire and ice or oil and water. There's some really different personalities in those two. And so sometimes I like to even back up to that point and look at, you know, where is that visionary integrator relationship, or is it in place or not? Because sometimes companies will really struggle when they start off with the EOS if you've got a visionary but no integrator. So the visionary tends to have those big ideas, 50,000 foot person, not as great at that focused energy, and causes frustrations for themselves and the team as well when they start, you know, we call organizational whiplash, kind of going down one path for 90 days and then kind of getting frustrated and moving in a different direction for 90 days. And so that's a key area that I find interesting right away, even before talking about EOS, even just, you know, entrepreneurs who are frustrated or CEOs that are frustrated, and you find that either they don't trust the leadership team to, you know, start to let go of the vine a bit, or there just isn't a great, you know, relationship or an integrator role there. And then moving on beyond that, let's say there is a good visionary integrator and start to say where some of the frustrations are. Just, I think, as you referenced, the accountability chart or this functional accountability or accountability just in terms of who's accountable for what in the organization, that tends to be that fundamental piece where nothing else works unless there's clear accountability. And however that's defined in the EOS, we define it as the accountability chart, but we want to make sure that, you know, people aren't doubling up on what we call seats or functions. Want to make sure that there aren't gaps in the organization where, you know, balls are being dropped. And so that is usually, if somebody says, oh, I'm frustrated with the US, that's the place we'd start, is that accountability chart. And then start to look through that area and find out if there's any major gaps. If that seems to be in pretty good shape, then, you know, the next thing we take a look at is the rocks. Are they setting these 90-day priorities that are well-defined or smart, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound? And if those seem to be a pretty good place and accountability chart is in a pretty good place, then the next place we'd look is the level 10 meeting, because that can also be that. And that's that weekly meeting that if that's not effectual, if that's not effective, a lot of times I would say, well, EOS isn't working because that level 10 meeting isn't same time, same place, all that good stuff. And then last but not least, and that also relates to the level 10 meeting as well, as the scorecard. So sometimes we'll get the feedback saying, well, the scorecard doesn't work. And so usually the scorecard doesn't work because maybe it's not weekly activity-based metrics. Maybe there are no more lagging indicators. There's a few things that can go on the scorecard. Or they're not looking at the scorecard in 13-week worth of history. So part of the scorecard is to drive the accountability, but there's also part that's looking at trends as well. So those would be the initial kind of way that would triage if somebody just kind of hands up, EOS isn't working for me.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of components in what we talked about that needs, regardless of what system you have, there has to be some way, shape, or form a dashboard. What a lot of people forget that business is all about velocity, or operating a business is all about velocity. So you've got pace, you've got traction, you've got momentum. Momentum is calculated. What are you covering over a period of time? So how many widgets an hour are you making? How many widgets an hour? How many widgets a month are you selling? So there's always a momentum that needs to be captured. Now, don't blame the process for your lack of understanding what are critical KPIs within your business that need to be measured in both. So for those who don't know this, leading indicators are things that if you do well, will project a target, right? So Chris needs to have 5 weekly sales call to achieve, I don't know, $20 of revenue in the week, right? So that means that if Chris makes those daily calls, we know that the following week we'll get $20 in the back from historical data. Now, lagging indicators is behind what we've got, right? So for those listeners, those are things that have happened in the past that will say, here's what's happened in the past. From there, you use that data to drive leading indicators. That's what a lot of people forget, is to say, well, how many injuries did we have? Well, we had 13 in the month of May. Okay, great. What are you going to do? The scorecard, critical, is what activities will we measure that we can measure in the future to make sure that we attacked the lagging indicators of the past. I always give the example of, imagine you're driving your car at some speed that you feel 50 kilometers an hour, 30 miles an hour, with the windshield blocked off, and the only way to look forward is to look through the rearview mirror on what you see from the behind the window. So how safe do you think you're going to feel? How much risk are you enabling the business? So how about you drive safe and then you keep gassing? Anyways, the scorecard, I just want to make sure that everybody understands that lagging indicators are okay, but you need to be able to drive leading indicators to be able to address those lagging indicators.
Exactly. And the way that I typically teach it is an example that is close to home for me, which if anybody like me has tried to lose weight at some point over your life, you know how challenging that can be. And the way that I do that with a scorecard is say, well, one option is every week, get on the scale and what do you weigh? Okay, is that good? Is that bad? What do I need to change? That's a lagging indicator, right? That's the end result. And whether it's blood pressure as well, you know, if your blood pressure isn't where you want it to be, that's a lagging indicator. That's a result of other activities. So the scorecard would be things like, what was my daily calorie consumption? What was my minutes that I exercised? What was the number of steps that I walked? And those are the leading indicators. Those are things I have, I can control and have some ability around. Because I think a lot of times, and whether it's trying to lose weight or lower your blood pressure or achieve some business goal, a lot of times we'll abandon actually what's working because we haven't quite yet seen the result. And so then the lagging indicators, you don't need to check those every week because those typically won't show up for a little ways. And so maybe every 2 weeks or every month you get on the scale and you say, okay, here's all the activity I performed. Here's the result I got. Do I like the result? Great. Keep doing the activity. Do not like the result. Okay. What do I need to change? But now you're doing it with things you've got some control over. And I find giving some examples, whether they're you know, personal, real life, or business related, too often I've found you get to the end of the year, and this is an example that was brought up to me recently, a professional services company thinking, you know, we've been busy, we've been getting projects, I've been hiring people, I just did my year end, and there's barely any profit. And, you know, how does that happen? He's a smart guy. It wasn't that issue. It's just that lack of real connection between the activities, like the sales calls or the appointments booked or those upfront activities and the end result, which often won't show up for weeks or months down the line. So unless you're starting to track and make those connections, how are you going to get any better?
So let's bring it back to the title of the show is, you know, living the life that they deserve. I think the word that you mentioned in the past minute or two is control. I think that the one thing that EOS does, regardless if whatever you choose, you might not like certain components of EOS, whatever, don't give a shit. I think that the example that Chris just gave is like, oh, I'm making thousands and thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions. And you're saying, well, oh, wow, I just went through a whole year and there's zero money in the bank account, whatever. What has, if we bring it back to the title in regards to the people that we've helped, what's the one thing that they really thank you for saying, oh, wow, EOS, thank you so much, Chris. EOS has changed, ...
Yeah, I think the challenge is that it's different for every business or every CEO. And the question that we start off with is, what do you want from your business? And without much thought, usually it's growth. Let's say, how much growth do you want from your business? What will that growth do for you personally? And once you start driving into that, you actually often the conversation shifts a little bit more towards, well, I'd actually like to be able to sell the business in 5 years, or I'd like to be able to hand the business off to my children, or, you know, I'd like to be able to take a vacation that's longer than a week. And so you start to thinking, okay, when you said growth and profit, those are really means to an end of some sort that you're talking about. So I think the one thing that get thanked for is really clarity of purpose, right? To say, I hadn't actually given some thought since, you know, way back before I started the business of what I really wanted out of this business. And I kind of got into it thinking that the business was my life, when really thinking, no, my life is my life. And then the business was part of it. And it's actually had some detrimental effects on the rest of my life. So now if I can back up a little bit, and more often than not, we find with companies in the US, they maybe start it to grow and sell, but then realize, oh, actually, I can run this business 2 days a week and I can start another business because that's what I love to do. Or I thought I wanted to grow it, but actually, this is a pretty good lifestyle business. I can actually downsize, be really profitable, and not have to make a change. And yet, before really kind of getting their feet into EOS and what it meant, hadn't actually thought about those things. And so that's where, you know, even before a company starts with EOS, the question is, what do you want from your business? And that's a question they often haven't actually asked themselves for some time, or even at least, you know, pulled on that thread a little bit and said, you know, why do I want that? How will that help me personally, my family, my, you know, employees, all the rest of that.
People tend to forget that they. I love it when somebody goes, well, business is business and life is life. I said, what a load of shit that is. I like the one feedback that I get quite frequently, who people who see me at home and in rugby. I'm very, very involved in rugby, very involved in non-for-profit, or this organization called Mission Possible. And we'll talk about for non-for-profit with EOS. And they see me at, you know, work events and they go, shit, like, you're always this happy-go-lucky, you're always this gregarious all the time. I said, yeah, just my wife tells me to shove it up all the time, and that's at work or at home. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that I've adopted similar systems before EOS of tracking behaviors for my life. And this is what, when I left the military, And pardon my blasphemy here in my French, but the one thing that the sergeant major told me, he says, Martin, there's three important things in life. He's like, your health, mental and physical health, number one. Number two, your family, and whoever, he says, family is thicker than blood. So whoever you include in that family. And number three, every fucking thing else after that. Right. It's funny when you get to a point where people are seeking advice from others, business owners are seeking advice, how sometimes they're so focused on, I'll use the word business, that they forget that what they're really looking for is using the business to do something in a lifestyle kind of event. And you're like, shit, you got this back-ass backwards, brother. And how just giving them the tools, because I think EOS is such a fabulous toolbox to have, right? It's a starter pack. You go to Canadian Tire and go, here's your 72 You know, here's your 72 toolbox kit to start off with. Does it have everything? No. Does it have everything that you need? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right? And I think it's a wonderful life toolbox that you should apply at home. We have L10s at home. We do. I'm serious.
Yeah, no, I agree. Same thing. Like I use that weight example as just an example, but I personally had to lose weight, had to lower my blood pressure, and I used the tools in EOS to do it, right? And it's not, like to say, it's not a magic pill or a silver bullet. Like it's hard, diligent, you know, accountable, disciplined work. But the tools are simple, right? It's not meant to be something where you need to get, you know, a bunch of expert consultants in to fix your business. You know, people like myself who do what I do, we help you to help yourself, right? It's the whole point of the idea is to be self-sufficient, help to teach, facilitate, and coach on these tools, and then get the heck out of the way. And that's our role is not to dig into the business, but to help business owners, entrepreneurs, their leadership teams be self-sufficient and get what they want.
The one thing that I want to really, because I was part of EO, do you know the organization called EO? Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurs Organization, right? So there's, as entrepreneurs, you know, shiny new thing. Oh, what's this? What's that? And EO was adopted, or EOS was adopted a lot by EO, and there's a symbiotic relationship there. What I really want to push people, and that's one of the reasons why my company, Urgio, is in business, is that EOS is a great tool, but if you're not an electrician, you can have a Phillips screwdriver. If you know nothing about electricity, there are more chances that you kill yourself than bring your business to the next level. So there's capacity and capability. So what I love about EOS is it gives you where your gaps are. It is the functional accountability, what I absolutely love. You put it on a wall, you go, oh, shit, there's a great big gaping hole here. There's a great big gaping hole here. How do we solve that hole? I think that's the beauty of the functional accountability. What I see often is that they get so excited about EOS that they feel that it's going to solve all their problems and that it's going to find people for them, that it's going to give them the capability of understanding how to grow a business past 200 people, which they've never done before.
Right.
And so that's the one thing that one of the reasons why we're in business is because of that, is people understand, say, hey, I don't know how to do this, or I don't want to know how to do this. There are people who are much better than me who have led large corporations and been part of this that I can hire to bring to my company to the next level. So I just want a word of caution. EOS is fabulous. It is one of the best tools out there, if not the best ones for what we're talking about, but it does not solve your capacity or capability issues in regards to knowledge and muscle, if you want to call it.
I think that's right. Just the same way a gym membership isn't going to make you healthy.
Exactly. Right? Oh, perfect example. Perfect example.
Yeah, and some of us can do it and you can make your way through it. Typically it takes longer. It's more effort. I was actually sponsored an EO conference a couple of weeks ago, and I know exactly what you mean, like lots of excitement around what's new, but then talk to an entrepreneur and it's like, oh, it feels like just one more thing. It's like, I agree. That's the challenge, right? Is it really is less is more. Mm-hmm. It's not going to fix it for you. But I like to say the system is simple, but not easy. It takes dedication. It highlights, just like you'd said, highlights maybe where you've got issues with your accountability, maybe where you've got issues with even solving issues. And the hard work is making your progress through that. But at the same time, if you, lots of experts out there that can assist and help you get through that that challenging part, getting up and running and then getting out of the way and having you take it over from there.
There's a company that one of our clients, he's done really well at EOS, and EOS is actually the tool that helped them realize, hey, I need help. And, you know, I've done this, I've done everything that I've could or capable of doing, and I'm just kind of stagnant. Not to say that company was in a good position, but it was not growing to the initial targets that he had when he first started. So that was the thing. And he's like, that's how, one of the reasons why he reached out to us. Chris, I want to get your opinion, because so Kevin and I always argue about one thing in specifically. So his view of rocks and my view of risks. So we have six pillars of business at Urjo, right? So we have governance, which is leadership, how you lead the business, people, growth, operations, economy, you know, economics, financials, and the last one is risk. So I come from a world of high risk, high labor. So we're always addressing risk. And when we moved into a more, when I accepted Kevin as the integrator, he had not been exposed to risk management the same way I have. So what's your, I always think of risk first, like what are the risks? And he's always thinking rocks first. What's your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
No, that's a good question. I guess I've never really thought of them as being particularly distinct in my mind. And there, I'll give you a little bit of rationale for that is my experience prior to being part of the software company was with a large military communications company and contractor, very, very risk averse. And coming from an engineering background, you know, it's all about risk, safety first. And so I would actually facilitate some sessions where we would identify all the risks on a matrix as far as probability of that risk and the impact of that risk. And the getting to the point around rocks is then the way that I see rocks sometimes is how then can you shift a high probability, high impact risk into a lower part of that spectrum. So maybe reduce the potential probability of that risk, or reduce the potential impact of that risk. And so rocks have always mean to me a way of harnessing people energy around a particular area. And risk is kind of a quantification of the unknown. What's going to happen. So I don't know that there's one or the other, and I'm not sure I'm being particularly straightforward in my thought. I see them as they're interrelated to one another. And maybe going to a non-EOS talk way back, one of my teachers early on said, you know, all business really comes down to profitability and risk. And if those two are aligned, the third part of it, the capital to make that project or idea or business happen will come along. And so I think to that extent, risk comes first, right? Because if your risk and profitability are matched, everything else lines up. But to get to that risk profile that you want, rocks, I think, are one of the tools that can potentially be used to help to get to the risk profile you're looking for. But I'm not sure if that makes sense or just a ramble.
It is a complex problem to solve, to which we always have two sides of a story. I've been able to convince Kevin to follow some risk management, and Kevin has been able to convince me by getting out of the way and letting them implement the rocks component. What I want to say, though, is have seen facilitators, how you get to the rocks, the methodology that Chris, I'm sure you use, that Kevin uses for us, that Caesar uses, the methodology to get to those rocks and to facilitate a quarterly event or an annual is really, really good. I love that it is always working through people, which I'm a firm believer in behavioral based leadership. And I think that EOS has done such a great job of doing that.
I think you're very much in alignment with my thoughts around that, because I think one of the things that really resonates with me about EOS is it's not an expert coming in to tell you what to do in your business, not saying you should produce this widget or that widget, or you should do this, expand into this geography or that geography. It really is harnessing the power of that leadership team around the table. And in my experience with that, not EOS necessarily, but I came to that realization a little bit later in life that I did a little experiment myself and would come into a potential challenging meeting, we're trying to resolve an issue, and I think, okay, I think this is the answer, but I'm not going to start with that. We'll facilitate a discussion around it. I never had that as being the top solution, because when you actually integrate the experiences, the understanding of the people that are around the table, more often than not, you've got a simpler, more effective solution than any one person could have come up with. But you only get that through that harnessing of people. And it's so often you see that idea of the one dominant personality coming in, this is what we should do. And everybody else says, okay, kind of checks out
and make that
happen. So I do agree that that's fundamental value of having that facilitated conversation to bring everyone to the table and ultimately have them agree that these are the priorities. Because even if it could have been one person just stating the priorities, having them come to it collectively together and part of that facilitated discussion, even if the end result is the same, you have so much more alignment of purpose and buy-in, for lack of a better word, towards that end.
We are fully implemented EOS. Like I said before, who people are listening, I'm not saying that EOS is what we implement to all of our businesses, because it's only EOS works well with small to medium enterprises. When you go and you deal with bigger clients or smaller clients, EOS doesn't necessarily fit. You know, you'll get your toolbox and you're only going to use, you know, the flathead screwdriver or, you know, the ratchet set, but it's not going to be as effective depending on the size and volume of business and people that you have. You know, if it's a tangible business, then Kaizen, the agile methodology is always good as well. So sprint methodology in regards to technology and or others. Where I want to get to is that I want to bring it back to living the best life. For me, the two things that EOS has done really, really well is I always speak about singularity of purpose. What is, I don't like to say there are guidelines. I like to say there's a center line. And you should always be able to hold on to the center line. You can reach as far out as you can, but there needs to be a way to connect to that center line, right? Because that's the direction. That is that singularity of purpose. And I think EOS does such a wonderful job of, that's not important, keep it to the rock. That's not important, keep it to the rock. And you repeat that cycle on a weekly basis that gets the mindset, oh no, that's not important. We'll tackle it at the next quarter. We'll tackle it at the next quarter. Because sometimes now that I've embraced my role as a visionary, I throw wrenches and stuff, man. They'll go, ah, and then I go, oh shit, I did it again. They're going, yeah, but we're okay. We're okay. We're okay. We know you're going, you're living, you're touching, you're feeling the future, Martin. We know it, but we also know that you understand that we're not going to change anything that we're doing if we don't see value in it. I was like, yes, I'm just talking. I'm just talking to talk. So it really lets me be creative. And then they just kind of wait and they go, okay, so what crazy idea have you come up this week? So now I'm kind of held accountable to think through and build big relationships. The second thing that it has done, which is, so number one, as the owner, founder, creator, it brings me in a place where I feel happy to create, if you're a visionary type, right? For Kevin was always the visionary, but now he loves his position as integrator. He's so happy, I'm happy. The dynamic duo is working really well. The other component is I've been able to take time off. So before I was a solopreneur and I had big relationships and we had all these things. What now with EOS implemented with key activities and accountability, we are very clear on who does what, and I can actually be controlling the time off that I have. So I want to kind of bring that full circle to say, if you use EOS, the two things that I've lived are those two things. Singularity of purpose, you don't have to, you can be creative, you got good direction, and the second thing is really liberating my time.
Yeah, that's fantastic to hear. And I think that's a lot of times that the visionary frustration with entrepreneurship is or running a business generally is just that you described, is that you get the energy from the big ideas and the big relationships and yet are doing these what visionaries would consider mundane tasks and, you know, trying to put together these plans that just aren't giving them energy and yet are so critical for the business. And I was talking to a visionary entrepreneur not too long ago. He was frustrated. He's like, I've tried all these training things. I'm not a good operations manager. It's like, I don't think I could ever train you to be an operations manager. That's not in your best interest at all. What's in your best interest is there are people that we call integrators, and that's what they love. Like, they're built to do it. That's in their DNA. They could try to be a visionary, and sometimes they do okay. But they're really built to be paired with a visionary, because they get their energy from that visionary's energy, and that pairing can, you know, free them both up, because the integrator does what they love doing. They've got somebody that they can, you know, is that guiding individual, those ideas that they can really help to build. And I learned early on that, you know, I felt I was entrepreneurial, but I met a few visionaries and thought, oh, I'm not entrepreneurial. I know I can see what they do, and that's not me. Not until later on I realized, oh, actually, what often made them so successful is that they found that other half. They found that integrator that they really paired well with. And integrators love nothing more than to help build, right? They just maybe don't have the vision to build it themselves, but they're absolutely comfortable and in their happy place if they can take that vision, build out that plan, and make it happen.
Keep the train on time. That's what I tell Kevin. He's like, Kevin always keeps the train on time. Chris, final question. What is the piece of reference, book, movie, comment? Not EOS. You're not allowed to use EOS. You're not allowed to use jet fuel or anything like that. Give me something that is that you attach yourself to that really defines your MO.
You know, I won't overthink this, because I'll just say the first thing that comes to my mind. Right now, it's the teachings of Seth Godin. He's a marketing guru, and I find him always intrigued by his clarity of thought around how entrepreneurs often need to get out of their own way and think through how to be authentic in the world, how to do what you love, not try to be gimmicky, not try to pick up on the new latest fad and make a couple bucks here and there. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's exactly along the line of what you were thinking, but that's the immediate to mind, and no singular book of his comes to mind in particular, just the general ethos that he teaches and ascribes to. I've found it really resonates with me.
You are coming from a tech background, and just the way that you speak, the way that you hold yourself, I can see how powerful you can be, because all I can see is you following checklists. And then you've got this great EOS system. When I think of a facilitator who follows the process, who is kind, who is compassionate, who speaks the way that you do to implement for the betterment. Wow. And somebody who did not, who was very not adverse, but skeptical of it at first, to now loving it and really spreading the gospel of it. Congratulations. I think, if ever you're interested in learning more about EOS, all the details will be down below, and get a hold of Chris. I'm sure there'll be an email or LinkedIn profile as well. So
that's excellent. No, I appreciate that. And I think you really nailed it. That's something that I really love technology. I love the beauty and the elegance of what we can put together, but none of it works without people. And that's, you know, where I've loved EOS as well, is it really, It doesn't discount technology. There's lots of great things you can do with it, but none of it really matters if we're not getting what we want out of our business, out of our life. And that's, you know, EOS is one way to help do that. But ultimately, that's the goal. Live the life you want to live.
Thank you. With that being said, my name is Martin Hunter. I'm the host of What CEOs Talk About, where we translate strategy into frontline operations. Please like, subscribe, and click to the notification bell to know when we're coming up with the next episode. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to What CEOs Talk About. Make sure to click subscribe to get notified about future episodes, or check us out at www.whatceostalkabout.com.